This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Today on Blazing Grace, we will be listening to a broadcast that Mike did with Senior Pastor Brian Michaels of Springs Lighthouse in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Good afternoon, Colorado Springs. Thank you so much for joining us today live on Crosswalk Colorado Springs. It is a joy to be with you, and man, what an amazing, amazing day. Again, we're glad that you're with us. Whatever else you may be doing, that you would take the time to tune in is a blessing to us. Hopefully, we can be a blessing to you today. I have a guest in the studio with me today. His name is Mike Janung, and he is the head of a ministry called Blazing Grace. You can find all of their information at blazinggrace.org. Mike, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's been a couple of years since we saw each other. I mean, other than you showing up a week early for the show, which caught me way off guard. But it's good to see you again.
Thank you. Yeah, I went to RMC, the church you were pastoring a good 20 years ago, and enjoyed it.
Oh, well, thank you. And then you just moved back to town. So what was the impetus for that?
Yeah, we moved to Arizona in 2020, right? In July, right smack in the middle of a big heat wave, and unloading a U-Haul truck in 107-degree temperature is something you don't want to experience too much.
No, thank you.
But we were there for 5 years, and our ministry has helped people with porn addiction, sex addiction, and adultery, and had a radio show there, too. And so God just opened the doors for us to come back, and here we are.
That's fantastic. So did you move there because of the ministry that God had opened up for you, or was it just a part of a work move? I mean, you know what? Let's come back to that, actually. Let's start with this. Give our listeners a little bit of a feel for who you are as far as your faith journey, how you came to Christ, and let's start there, and then we can move into your ministry call and all of those kinds of things.
Sure. I grew up in a Christian home, and we were going to a Baptist church. But even though it was a Christian home, we had a lot of problems. There was physical abuse from my dad's side. So if I didn't eat a meal right, I could get a beating. I turned a rock over in front of an office one time and got a beating. When I was 14 years old, I was home alone from school one day, and my mom walked into the room and molested me. So that really messed my head up, and I internalized the idea, well, this is what the Christian life is. What do I need it for? So I pretty much walked away from God at that time in my youth and stopped going to church and threw myself into the sex, drugs, and rock and roll atmosphere of the 70s, binging on masturbation and porn at least once a day, a lot of drugs, a lot of LSD, cocaine, drinking myself into a stupor. And you know, the porn wasn't enough, so there was promiscuity. Mm-hmm. As a single man, I got picked up an STD at a one-night stand with a woman. The thing I regret the most during those years was I had an affair with a married mother of three kids when I was single. So by the time I was 23 years old, I was a big, giant mess.
I can imagine.
Chemically messed up, emotionally messed up, every way, and then God started calling me out of all that. I went to church one night on a whim, and the pastor was speaking about the time when Abraham was called to leave his father. And then the pastor, this was a little-known guy named Chuck Swindoll in Fullerton, California.
Yeah, never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
I think his show is right on after this.
Yeah. He punched you and he said, there are some of you here tonight, and God is calling you to leave where you are. And that just speared me. And I was living with that woman at that time.
Oh, wow.
And so I knew God was calling me out of that. I quit the drugs and the alcohol because you just feel crummy after that. But I figured with the porn, I wasn't hurting anybody. I was doing it by myself. And the churches we were attending, they weren't talking about it. So I figured, what's the big deal? Stopped dating girls who weren't Christians. Met Michelle, the woman who I would marry. We got married in 1989, and like most naive young men, I thought getting married was going to fix my lust problem because I'd been continuing to binge once a day. Mm. Well, I was wrong. It made it 10 times worse because we bring in all of our baggage, all of our false coping mechanisms in the marriage.
Right.
She thought she's marrying this great Christian guy because I could talk Bible. You know, we know the Christian lingo.
Mm-hmm.
But just months into our marriage, I'm binging all over again. Once a day with porn. And then the thing with lust is it never satisfies. It always leaves us wanting more.
Yeah, it never satisfies because it is never satisfied.
That's right.
Yeah.
The flesh. We're frying up the flesh.
Right.
So a year and a half into our marriage, I took a business trip, and I went to Ohio, and pictures went enough that night, and I called a prostitute into my room and committed adultery. And I felt so horrible and filthy after that act, like a hypocrite. And I'm thinking back to my wife back home. She thinks she's married to this great Christian guy, and it's all a lie. And I called her and told her what I'd done. And I'll never forget the conversation. It still tears me up today where she just started crying and sobbing and saying my name over and over and over again, Mike, Mike, Mike. And then I realized that I hadn't just hurt her. I'd broken her heart. And I was in serious trouble. So I figured I need to get help. I got to do something about this. And this, I'm in my early 30s by now. So we go to a marriage retreat, and the guy who's leading the marriage conference.
So she went with you?
She went with me.
So she stayed with you?
Yeah, she stayed with me. We were going to marriage counseling, but I had never told anybody in the church.
Right.
And I walk up to the pastor who's leading the conference. The guy's bright, smiling, and happy, and I think maybe, just maybe, I can talk to this guy. And I walk up to him, my head's down. I'm so ashamed. And I mumbled the words, I got this problem with pornography. Immediately, the smile vanished. And he yelled at me. And he said, just stop doing it. Just stop.
Hmm.
And I just nodded and walked away. Because if I could just stop doing it, what do I need God for?
Well, and why hadn't you to that point? Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So I said, that's it. I'm done getting help in the church. So this was back in the days of the Yellow Pages. In 1991.
For our younger listeners, it used to be a large book that had phone listings in it.
Right. So I found a 12-step group for sexaholics. I went there. I'm driving there. I'm thinking, there's going to be a bunch of sleazy, dirty, rapist guys been in prison. I get there in the first meeting, and I'm shocked because around the room there's 15 men. And they share their stories. Each one is a Christian. One had been a senior pastor. One had been a worship pastor.
Mm-hmm.
All around the room, these are believers. And I'm thinking, what the heck is going on here?
So they looked a lot like you.
They did.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's your point.
Right.
And so basically this is kind of a group to deal with this issue?
Sexaholics Anonymous, right.
Okay.
12-step group.
Okay. And was that helpful?
It was to a point. I mean, after that, I got a year and a half of abstinence.
Mm-hmm.
And then I traveled and I lost. I used to have a lot of struggles with watching porn in the hotel rooms. Then I got 3 years of abstinence, but then I lost it again. I wasn't acting out once a day, but it was once a month, once every 2 months.
Just struggling.
still struggling. And some guys, I'll hear them try to justify and say, well, it's only once a month, but I was in bondage still once a month, once a day. It didn't matter. I couldn't walk away from it. And so finally,
because you knew it was sin.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Misdirected sexual desire.
And I knew I was in bondage to it. So basically 8 years after I tried to break free from this stuff, I just gave up. I'd been to counseling. I'd gone to tons of groups, read my Bible every day, prayed every day, been involved in ministry. I've done all this stuff. I just gave up. I said, God, you're either the God you say you are who can change lives. This whole church thing is a big joke because I'm empty and I'm miserable and I'm in bondage and I got nowhere. And in that moment, he showed me my heart. And I always thought maybe I did a few good things in ministry and knew the Bible. But what he showed me was ugly. My heart was pitch black. There was nothing good in there. And then he started showing me that I had never really gone all the way, meaning 100% all the way in. It's not the 95% we do right. It's the 5% that we blow it that takes us down. And then, so I started going all the way hard, and then he starts bringing me all these verses about, if you seek me with all your heart, you will find me. Seek the Lord and his strength. Seek his face continually. And when we seek his face, we want to know him. But what a lot of us do is we seek his hand. What you can do for me, God. And I realized that I had never, ever really sought God all my life. I had sought women. I had sought money. I had sought success, Bible knowledge, theology, doctrine, ministry, everything. But I had never sought God himself.
So you weren't really pursuing after him the way the scripture calls us to. Sure. I imagine there's a lot of our listeners feeling like, yeah, I've been there. Maybe I am there. So that's a good recognition.
I had the knowledge, but my heart was still empty. And that was what was so miserable about the whole deal. So I finally got through to my head. God was saying to me, I want you to seek me with everything. And I didn't know what I was doing. So I just said, all right, Lord, I'm going to do that. I'm going to go after you hard with everything I've got. No holds barred. I want to know you. I want your presence. I want all of you, or I give up. Just 2 weeks later, I'm reading in the book of 1 John, I'm in chapter 4, where it says, God is love, and whoever abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. And I read that, and I just got depressed. And I said, why is it, God, every time I read about your grace and your love, I get depressed? And the Holy Spirit spoke immediately, and he said, because you don't believe it. I knew the truth, but I didn't believe it. I believed God was harsh, condemning, ready to destroy me at my every mistake, and I was making a heck of a lot of mistakes.
That moment where you think God's going to destroy me for everything I mess up, and then wondering why he hasn't.
Yeah.
We certainly give him enough opportunities.
That's right. And what happened in that moment was a valve turned in my heart for the very first time in my life after years of being in the church. And this incredible burst of joy flooded in and power like I had never, ever experienced before. I said, wow, this is amazing. Finally, this is the life and what I've been looking for. The joy and the peace and the love is just, it's like coming alive from the dead. And it was wonderful. And then I got all this joy and I think maybe I can help a few people with this sex stuff because, well, I knew how miserable it was and... But I figured I was a Christian freak or a pervert because I wasn't hearing sex and porn and masturbation talked in church, about in churches. But this was back in 99 and 2000.
Sure.
When Promise Keepers was hitting their stride and they started asking the guys leaving their big arena events, when's the last time you look at porn? And the numbers just boggled my mind when I saw that half of Christian men looking at porn. Half.
Meaning half of them were honest.
Yeah. Right. How could it be half? We're not talking about sex because of what? And I almost lost my marriage and my family and had a faith crisis. This almost destroyed my life. Half was the good old days. Yeah. Now those numbers are approaching 70%. I talked to the senior pastor of a church of 1,000 not long ago. He told me 80% of the men who came to their men's retreat confessed to a current struggle with pornography.
Wow. Now, that doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. Again, it's addictive. And so when it's right at the end of your arm, because you've got a phone in your hand, mm-hmm. then, yeah, it only stands to reason that more and more men would struggle with it.
Yeah, in 2007, those numbers shot up because that's when the iPhone came out. Mm-hmm. And now we're all just one click away from going to the wrong place with a phone, smartphone.
Yeah, and a lot of times it's designed for things to click you to those spots.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, so what brought you to the place then of what was the biggest thing that brought you to that place of freedom? Just understanding the grace of God more?
Yeah, well, receiving His love, receiving mm-hmm. the truth in my heart. But it was in combination with the Holy Spirit doing that work too. So it wasn't all just me receiving it. He did a powerful work at the exact same time. I needed Him.
Mm-hmm. So it was a place of deeper submission?
Submission, surrender, receiving, the truth going from my head to the heart.
Right.
And going after God hard, that was really the spark, I think.
Okay. And so now you do conferences, you've written 9 books, mm-hmm. Primarily dealing with this issue, mm-hmm. I'm assuming. I've got a couple of them right here that you dropped off, and thank you very much for those. And so do you travel the country doing this? I know you have a radio show as well,
mm-hmm.
and that you're coming on to this network, right? Not this week, but next week you'll be on Thursdays at 4:00
mm-hmm.
With Blazing Grace Radio. So God has obviously opened up a door for you to share with a lot of other men regarding this issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we also have ministry partners in Europe. So I was in England and Finland and Italy speaking in churches last year, and I usually do that once or twice a year, go over there. And I'm going to be honest with you, it's a lot easier to get into European churches with this than the American church.
Explain that to me as best you can.
Well, first off, the culture is different in Europe. So ministries like Blazing Grace are very few and far between.
Mm.
So when I go over there, they roll up the red carpet. Please come, and we want to hear about this. They're much more liable to host a conference. You're dealing with a lot smaller churches there. We don't have any big, giant... They don't have the big, you know, monolithic...
Right.
Big 5,000, 10,000 member churches over there.
A large church in most of Europe is 100, 150 people.
That's right. The other thing we've seen is that, and I don't want to generalize... But
well, we generalize because it's generally true, so it's okay.
But what I noticed when I talk to a lot of people here about it, if I talk to a Christian I don't know, they say, so what do you do? And as soon as the porn word comes out of my mouth, the eyes glaze over, they'll change the subject. And for some reason, comfort, I think, plays a big part in this, because if talking about sex or masturbation for the pulpit makes me uncomfortable, I don't want to hear it.
Interesting. So it's a comfort level as far as whether they feel comfortable talking about certain things?
Well, I'll illustrate with a story. So in 2018, we ran a billboard campaign here in the Springs. It said, struggling with porn, you're not alone, so are 66% of the men in church. I got emails and phone calls from Christian parents reaming me, because they had to tell their 9-year-old son what porn meant. And my response was always, if your kid is 18 and you haven't had the sex talk, it is too late. Because your sweet little Jimmy is going to school with Butch, who's had a smartphone for 3 or 4 years, and guess what's going to happen?
Interesting. Yeah, now I hear what you're saying, because I know that with my children, this wasn't the case, because I'm so old and now they're so old. But certainly with my youngest grand, or my oldest grandchild is 19 years old.
Mm.
And she was exposed to pornography in elementary school, by a classmate. and it was a bad situation. Young boy showing young girl pictures on their phone. And so I fear that you are absolutely correct that these kids are being exposed to this at younger and younger and younger and younger ages, largely due to the fact that they all have cell phones. And I think parents, generally well-meaning, I mean, there are just some, let's face it, there are some bad parents out there that just don't understand that their job is not to be their kid's friend, it's to be their parent. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of parents that just genuinely think, I need my kid to have a cell phone because I need things happen. We need to be able to keep in touch, blah, blah, blah. But they don't put any kind of restrictions on their access to the internet. They're seeing this stuff mm-hmm. and they're seeing it in elementary school.
Yeah. I gave my son the sex talk when he was 8. Mm. And when I did, he said, oh, that's gross. And he's 31 now. And then what happened was just 2 weeks later, he went to a sleepover at a house with Christian boys, and guess what they watched at midnight?
Mm.
And so this is why I tell mom and dad, you can't play ostrich here.
Yeah.
This is happening right in front of you.
It's a sad reality, but we definitely want to get to our kids first before the world gets to them. And, you know, that's a touchy subject. It's a difficult one. That might be another bit of subject matter for another show. So these European pastors don't have the same cultural kind of barriers, do you think, about talking about these things?
I think that's a part, but they're also hungry. They come off as hungry. I want to know more. I want to know how I can equip people. So a sermon on saying porn is sin, don't do it, isn't going to help people enough. We have to disciple them. We're called to make disciples, not just converts.
Mm-hmm.
So when I speak, I'm equipping people. This is the path to getting out of this mess. This is what it looks like, and this is what people are starved for.
Well, it's like any other addiction. It's really hard. I mean, you can say it to the alcoholic, stop doing that. And maybe some, that kind of works. I was thinking about that pastor that said that to you, stop doing that. It wasn't me, was it?
No. Not at all. Were in California.
Or Vegas. Yeah. So I just wanted to double check and make sure. I thought I just had this fleeting moment of fear because it sounds like something I might say in a sarcastic way and then hopefully go into something that's a little bit more helpful. But I know that discomfort. There are things that are not comfortable to talk about from the pulpit. This last Thursday night, we started a study in Leviticus. And, you know, right now is dealing with the sacrifices and those kinds of things. But we get into some chapters and there's some stuff that I think particularly men are not prone to being comfortable talking about. But you have to deal with these things because they are reality for us. Are we saying as pastors there's an area of life that we're unwilling to touch because it makes us uncomfortable?
Well, and you ever read Song of Solomon?
Right.
He's describing the woman's body and her breasts and mm-hmm. her navel and her garden. And what do you think he's talking about there?
Right. Right.
I mean, the thing is that sex is all over the Bible and God created it. And it's great in the right context. But the world is trying to shove it down our throat the wrong way. And the church should be bold about helping people in this area that are so many in bondage.
Well, and you said that's exactly right. It's right in the context in which God created it. It wasn't a mistake. I tell our congregation all the time, it wasn't like God made Adam, he made Eve, he put him in the garden, and then one day looked down and said, Gabriel, what in the world is going on down there? It was God's creation from the beginning. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful expression of oneness between a man and a woman who are united in a covenant relationship. And that's what God had desired. And just the same way that manure-rich soil is beautiful in a garden, it doesn't look good on your white carpet. And I think that sounds like what you're getting at.
Yeah, and the tragedy with pornography is that it reverses the sex drive. So the man eventually wants porn more than he wants his wife.
Mm.
And I really had to tell men, like, hey, we need to work now about you wanting to have sex with your wife. She's staring at the guy. They're sitting in my office. She's frustrated. because he wants to look at pictures more. And this is the bondage they get in. Mm. And I tell them, man, light it up. Put your marriage bed on fire. You're given this wonderful gift.
Right. Which is exactly what the scripture says, by the way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the marriage bed is undefiled.
Right.
That was God's intent.
We'll continue this interview that Mike did with Senior Pastor Brian Michaels of Springs Lighthouse next week. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Genung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.